Every single day I feel
the Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never knew I'm blessed, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Welcome back, it's your boy C-Rock. And that one studio on the What Are You Made Of show. So happy that you're here, listening, enjoying, whether you're working out, whether you're taking a walk, whether you're in the shower, you know, wherever you are. I appreciate you listening and being a part of the show while we bring you the ingredients that make our guests who they are. Today, I have Julie Brain Lady Anderson in the building. She is an in-demand international speaker, wielding her expertise in brain science to bring solution-based training into organizations for business, communications, team building, and leadership. Results such as increasing productivity, preventing conflicts, and improving organizational cultures. Julie brings more than 18 years of experience speaking, training, and consulting with individuals and up to large corporate organizations, utilizing brain personality connection and uniquely blending science and psychology with humor and relatability in her keynote presentations and interactive workshops. Brain Lady, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Mike. I'm so happy to be here. I'm looking forward to this very much.
Well, look, I mean, you know, I love the branding. I'm a big guy on branding and getting a, you know, differentiating factor, becoming that one. And I love that you have a nickname, Brain Lady.
That actually came from my clients, believe it or not. I mean, I started studying the brain years ago, decades ago, actually. And so I just loved it. And then people started saying when they met me at events, they were like, oh, you're that Brain Lady. So it was kind of like, okay. It stuck.
That's awesome. I love it. So we're going to get into that, what you do and all that. But before we do that, really going to dive into the ingredients of making that you who you are and what you've been through. And that's what this question we start the show with. What are you made of?
You know, I had to think about this one because I initially wanted to say snakes, snails, and puppy dog tails. But it's a combination. It's a combination of tenacity, smiles, positivity, and a little bit of sass.
Okay. Like you talking about software sass or like sassy?
Like sassy.
I know what you're talking about. I'm just messing with you. I've been hearing sass a lot lately because I'm in tech too. So I've been hearing sass. And as soon as I hear sass, I'm like, oh man, monthly recurring revenue.
Yeah. No. Like sarcasm and a little bit of a little bit of flippancy there, a little bit.
Yeah, I know. I'm messing with you. So where did you come from? What's your story, Julie? Everybody's got a story.
Well, physically, I came from Sacramento, California. So Northern California, California born and raised. I live up in the mountains now, but we had a little bit of I'm one of five daughters. I'm actually the center child, but when you talk about birth order and the personalities, I was the baby for 11 years. So I really take on more of those types of personality traits. And it was an interesting life growing up. My father was an abusive alcoholic. He lots of challenges with that. My mother was pretty much a typical codependent, and it led up to my father was actually incarcerated for manufacturing methamphetamines in connection to, you know, to the not so good industry that evolved around that. So yeah, it was a very interesting upbringing. There were a lot of challenges there.
And was he like hooked on drugs too? And that's how he got into that, you know, or was he just dealing it?
It was alcohol. It was always alcohol. Mm-hmm. It's funny because he wasn't a mean alcoholic. He wasn't a mean drunk. He was mean when he was sober.
Yeah.
He was drunk, he was philosophical. He knew the world answer to every single problem on the face of the planet. But man, when he wasn't drinking, he was a mean man. Yeah,
I think the thing is that with alcohol, he was normal when he was drinking.
Yeah.
That was his more like his real personality. Would you agree?
To some extent. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a lot of the personality that he put out to other people too. You know, when he got arrested, like there were so many people that were just like, what, Bill? No, what? And all of us girls were like, oh, you have no idea.
How old were you when he got arrested?
I was actually, by the time he was arrested, I was 21. Yeah. I'm pregnant with my first child.
And was it a shock to you or did you have an idea something wasn't right?
Nah, wasn't a shock at all. We were kind of raised in that family dynamics where children were to be seen and not heard. And we put out that perfect family look, right? And it was, you didn't dare talk about the secrets at home. So we all knew. It wasn't a surprise to us at all. I mean, I think the drugs part was probably a surprise, but the fact that he got arrested was like, oh, it's about time.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And, you know, a lot of people tell their stories of why they are a certain way, and then they live out that story that they tell themselves. And I share this a lot. Like, I grew up around a lot of brokenness, a lot of mental health issues, suicide, drug addicts, alcoholics. And I witnessed as an 8 to 10 year old kid in that window, people sharing why they were like that. And then they would validate that story and live out a shitty life and why they had all these different things. Oh, my parents were alcoholics, this and that. So I feel like if people would also say, well, I had an alcoholic parent and an abusive parent, and this is why I'm successful, then they would have that much more success versus the other part. Like, you've gone on to have some success. Is that how you shape the story?
Probably. You know, for me, I was always a digger. I always wanted to know the why behind, it started with natural health. I knew that if you took care of your body, you would be a physically and mentally healthier person. So I dug into that. And then from there, one of the courses was on psychoneuroimmunology, which is the connection between your thought process, your chemistry in your brain, and then your immune system, good or bad, based on your, you know, your primary emotional tone. And I was fascinated with the brain. And then it was like, okay, well, what else can the brain tell us about who we are and why we do what we do? And that became just a beautiful journey for me. It was like a weight off of my shoulders in understanding and building my own confidence and going, oh, okay, I don't have to be a perfect speller because that's not the way my brain's wired, kind of thing. As well as being able to look back at my family dynamics and my father and the generational abuse that he suffered. Not that I'm ever saying there's ever an excuse for abusing another individual on any level. I'm just saying that once you begin to broaden your mind, so to speak, and start to look at what drove that person to do what they did, then it begins to take a lot of the weight off of you. Because most victims will, or most individuals who grew up in this type of a dynamic will always go, well, what was wrong with me? You know, why was he always hitting me? Why was he always yelling at me? Why did he do this to me? Why did she do that to me? It always becomes like, what's wrong with me? Instead of going, okay, wait a minute, what was wrong with them that drove them to do those things to me?
Yep. Yep. Exactly. And I had a question on when it came to, what was the word that you just used a minute ago? It was a big giant word. I want to make sure the audience knows what you're talking about.
Okay, psychoneuroimmunology. And psycho, your brain, your thoughts. Mm-hmm. Neuro. The neurochemistry in your actual brain. Immunology.
Okay.
Which is how your thoughts in your brain affect the chemistry, the thoughts in your mind affect the chemistry in your brain and shift your immune system. So okay, psychoneuroimmunology.
Okay, got it. All right. You went fast with that. Like you said it fast. You described what it was, but I just want to make sure that the audience caught that because I didn't catch that full word. So thank you.
I appreciate
One thing I've learned and how to learn. I studied how to learn. I think it's one of the most powerful things you can do.
Oh, yeah.
In doing that, I never pass a word when somebody's speaking or when I'm reading that I don't understand the definition of.
Yep.
And it takes a little longer to get through something or a conversation or a book, but then it makes you faster later on and allows you to learn anything. So I do that often. So, all right. So then from there, growing up, you started getting studying this stuff and like, what kind of things did you experience in your life? Cause again, we have things that happen and then we take different pathways through decisions. And then there's a combination of decisions in our life that starts to shape our future, right? As you were going through coming out of abusive home, your father doing all this stuff, like, what decisions were you making that led into some trouble in your life possibly? And then how did you get out of it, if any? Or were you just always on the right path?
Good question. So on the positive side, it really drove me to not repeat the errors of my parents. I really, and that's why I dove into the mind so much and really understanding how my actions affected my children. And that drove me to do a lot of things very, very differently with my kids than the atmosphere that we were raised in. Now, there is no, once you have an issue, you always have an issue, right? Like once there's an imprint in your brain DNA, once there is an imprint in your brain wiring, you can't get rid of negative memories. You can rewire around them, but bad things are branded in our memory and they will affect us. You know, it led me to having some difficulty in my relationship with my husband. We've been married for 37 years and thankfully,
congratulations.
Thank you. I gotta get spiritual for a minute. I owe that to God, but you know, for me, there were definitely absolutely, conflicts and challenges within that relationship that were connected to my upbringing and my mother's codependency to my father and things along that line. So it took a lot of, it's still taking improvement and self-analyzation and mindful meditation as I react to certain situations and go, okay, now why did I do that? What was the source of that? And how do I improve myself so that I don't react incorrectly? We can only control ourselves, right? We can't control other people. We have to understand other people and that will help us in our own journey. But it behooves each one of us to kind of stop and go, okay, wait a minute. What growth do I need at this moment in time in my life? And it's different depending on what, you know, what stage you're in and what relationship you're in.
Yeah, 100%. And so do you think when you talk about the memory, we don't lose the memories of these different things, but what about the charge, the emotional charge that's on those memories? Can we go back and revisit them over and over again and like reduce that emotional charge that's on those so that we're not as reactive or triggered by them?
Yes.
Based on your studies?
It's different experts are going to tell you different things. I'm a certified brain health coach. And so I always go to those brain scans, right? And there are different things that you can do to desensitize. There's EDMR, EMDR. Which is the rapid eye movement. It's the body movement therapy that goes along with recalling those memories that helps to desensitize it because of the way the brain is wired. For some people, depending on the depth of the trauma, sometimes it can be too triggering. I don't want anybody out there listening to go, okay, I just have to think about my trauma every day and that's going to fix it. It's much more complicated than that. What I tell people is, look, some of these memories are like a Grand Canyon in your brain. Like that's how deep that neural connection is. It's not going to go away. But what you can do is create next to it a very positive neural pathway. And that's a pathway that you're looking at yourself and you're looking at your life or that experience in a positive way. Right. So I use the example. I was often my father, as I said before, children were to be seen and not heard. I was an extroverted auditory little girl, which means I talked a lot. So I can't tell you how many times I was told to sit down and shut up and very negative things connected to my, you know, talking. And so I had to flip that in my brain instead of looking at that as a negative, which that's the Grand Canyon negative connection. I had to build next to that, so to speak. Because neurons that fire together, wire together, right? So I had to create a neural wiring that was so deep in, look, Julie, you don't talk too much. What you have to say is powerful. The message you bring to people is life changing. So if you silence yourself, it's not good. You have to speak out, right? So now I'm creating so that when I'm triggered, if something happens and I instantly feel like, ooh, all I have to do is just go, wait a minute, take a deep breath, engage the higher thinking and go, wait a minute, I got a lot of great stuff to share, right? I don't talk too much. I got a lot of beautiful things, messages to carry. So that's kind of what I try to teach my clients or teach people that when I'm on the stage or whatever it is, it's like, if we try to say, I no longer have this, we just might be fooling ourselves. Right. It's better to acknowledge this was a reality of my life. Now, how can I turn that and build a positive based on that?
Isn't it basically as simple as making new decisions?
Yes. But it's not always easy. The steps are simple.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
right?
But when you do it, it's not easy. I'm not saying it is easy by any means, but when you make the decision, as hard as it may be, you just make a decision.
Yeah.
That's what changes everything.
Yeah. Because again, you're starting a whole new wiring pattern
in your brain. I want to relate this to the audience and make it as easy as possible, right? Because some people, soon as we talk about neuroscience and this and that, some people just shut off, you know, like they just shut off. So I like to, all right, make a decision, as hard as it may be, that decision is a new pathway. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So decisions, it comes down to decisions. You know, I told my kids the other day, if I'm wrong, let me know. Because I'm not always right. But my wife says I'm always. I pretend I'm always no, but at the end of the day, though, I tell my kids and my wife, we're talking, and they're like, "Yeah, I need to work on that," or "I'm going to try that," and I'm like, "Listen, all you got to do is decide." And I know it's hard sometimes, but if I say all you got to do, like, well, wait a minute, is it really that easy to just make a decision? And that is a neuro pathway, new neuro pathway.
Yeah.
So I love this. Let me ask you this. I want to stay in your story. So before I get into this, some of this stuff, I'm going to intertwine. What the hell with it? So, my brain and then mind. Where the heck is the mind?
The old question: which came first, the chicken or the egg? So I oftentimes refer to them as separate, right? Your mind is basically your thought process and everything connected to thinking. Your brain is the mass, right? Your brain is that mass of neural connections. I have a little tiny one up there, but like it's literally the mass of neurons and synapses or neurons and glia cells and all these different pieces that make up the brain. Your mind is the way that it thinks, the way it processes incoming data. The brain processes what we see. The mind processes the meaning of what we see.
Gotcha. A good explanation. I like that. So, okay. Let's go back to your story now. So then as you got older, right. Yeah. And you got out of like the teenage years into the college and all this, how did you get to really start diving into being a speaker and wanting to be known for the brain, being a brain lady, even though you didn't make up that name, but obviously you were going in that direction. Take us through that journey.
Actually, it's kind of funny because I one of these days I want to dig through the archives of boxes in my mom's garage. There's as far back as I can remember, like my mom has the old 8mm reel-to-reel movies of me dancing and clapping for myself when I was done dancing when I was 3 years old at a Christmas party, right? So it's like I was just the performer. And I was always the entertainer and I was always the one. Well, then when I got into my teens and I started diving into, at that point, natural health, because I'm a talker, it just kind of flowed naturally. It was a natural transition to begin to share the information that I was learning. And that kind of naturally transitioned onto stages and platforms. And of course, it started small. I homeschooled my kids for 16 years. From beginning to end, all three of my boys. And in the beginning, as I was learning the information on the brain and how the brain learns, I started getting hired to teach other parent educators how the brain learns and how that applies to your kids and understanding. And then it just kind of went from that to coaching and consulting with entrepreneurs and speaking on stages for entrepreneurs. And now it's a combination of entrepreneurs and corporate stages, corporate keynotes, things like that. So it kind of was just like this natural flow that it was the snowball, right? It started small, but as it continued to grow, I just started grabbing larger and larger stages.
And then the corporate speaking events, those are the ones that paid more than others because they have the money and the budget to do that. But like, is it something that comes to you through referrals or are you also promoting that and reaching out and all that to get those spots?
I do both. Yeah. Okay. We do both. I have referrals. I have a couple speakers agencies that send me leads from time to time. And then I have a dedicated person on my team who reaches out when there's call for speakers put out there.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of a combination of all everything.
And I'm just saying this because I have a lot of people in my audience that speak and are looking to start speaking and things. So I always ask these kind of questions too. And then also for the most part, when you get corporate events, are they 6 months out, a year out, a year and a half out? Like, how early do you get booked for those?
I think two years out is the furthest I've gotten booked. But sometimes it's 2 months, right? Okay. Most of the time when companies put out call for speakers for their, or industries, I should say, put out calls for speakers for their events, which is the gateway to corporate. You look for the corporate stages, meaning that the audience are corporates. Right? The audience are your HRs, your audience are your C-suite. That's where you now make those, you do this delicious thing that they get for free, that you grab their information, right? There's that whole method to that.
Yeah.
And then things are normally planned out, I would say 6 to 8 months ahead of time, but most time, calls for speakers are going to go out 6 to 8 months prior to the events. So get on the radar and start really looking. And reach out.
And then take us through that when you go on to get a, like, let's say you get a gig, right?
Yeah.
Do you do something different each time, or do you stick with the same keynote?
It depends. Well, I slightly tweak it. Always do your due diligence, right? Always research your audience. Always research your company that you're doing it for, your organization you're doing it for, because each one is going to have a different shift or a different personality to it, right? Mm-hmm. Most conferences have a theme. So each presentation, no matter what the title of that presentation is, or the information in the presentation is, I am going to tweak that to match and work synergistically with whatever the theme of the event is. When I work with my corporate clients in offsite trainings, that's always very specifically tailored to what they need, right? Gotcha. So if I am at a leadership retreat, I'm going to talk general leadership based on the personality, body language, facial expression, all that kind of stuff. But I'm going to tweak it. So, you know, I went and did one for a big Fortune 100 company. It was all safety managers. So obviously I tweaked it to match and used illustrations and examples that matched safety, right?
Yep,
so it's the same base information, but it's always customized to the situation or the particular client.
And so you've written a lot of books too. How many books have you written?
I'm a co-author in, I think, 6 books now, and I have personally written 3 books, and I have 2 in the queue.
And which one's your favorite so far?
Ooh, which one's my favorite? One that's in the queue.
Okay. All right. Besides that one, the ones that you've written.
Besides that one? Well, I have to say I'm a little prejudiced to the latest co-author. I actually headed up and put together a co-author book that was launched on digital on Friday, last Friday, the 23rd. And it's 15 Dynamic Women. And it's Women Excelling Everywhere, What Defines Their Passion and Success. And I'm really passionate about that, obviously, because A, it's my baby. And B, it is connected to my Women Excelling Everywhere leg of my corporate business, Your Best Mind. And it's new, and it's these, I just met some really cool women, and it went number one in the US. So, and number 3, I think, in the UK. Thank you. So we're excited about that. Yeah.
And how did you gather those ladies? Cause I hear, by the way, I've been a part of, I don't even know how many now, co-authored books, and one just was a bestseller. But I know how they got me, but different, they were all different. But how do you gather women or anybody, authors, when you write a co-author book?
For me, a lot through my contacts. So like you, I've been doing podcasts for many years, and one of them was specifically women focused. And so I went back and reached out to a lot of the women who I had interviewed on the podcast. And then I also had a publisher that actually, I don't do the publishing. I know nothing about publishing, right? I know my lane. I stay in it, and I hire somebody else to do the other stuff. And she knew some dynamic women. And so she introduced me to a few. But if it's something you're looking to do, it's that networking. It's going out there, meeting people, shaking hands, having genuine conversations to make sure that they're I don't want to say business model, their story, who they are, resonates with you. Mm-hmm. So you don't have, 5 chapters that are all about this. And then you have this one chapter that pops up and it's about astronomy. And that wasn't anything you were writing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They align. Yeah, they all align, yeah, right?
There you go. Align.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I thought I had to listen a little more to get the right word for you. So I was listening. No, that's awesome. And, you know, the book that you're working on now, is this a co-author book or is this a new one that by yourself?
No, I have two. One is the one that I'm really, I don't know. I'm 50-50, I guess, on one versus the other. So one is What Did You Say? So it's a guide to communication relationships in the brain. And so it's a lot of that technical neuroscience boiled down into very practical ways to improve your relationships and communication. And the other one is Change Your Mind, Control Your Brain, Manage Your Mindset. And that's about how you really have exploring the power of your mind from a literal brain chemistry point of view. Like, what is neuroscience? What do all these technical scans show us about how we can change the wiring? We can change what parts of your brain fire when based on what your thoughts in your head.
So, okay. So with that being said, how can people that are listening, what are the steps for them to go through when they need to reframe or like take a different perception of an incident? Or perspective, yeah. I'm sorry, perspective of an incident. Like, what's the best way to go through that? Because, you know, you can actually change history by just changing the way you viewed what happened in the past. People don't think you can change history, right? You can. But, like, what are the steps to do that?
So I give people, I always tell people the biggest secret is to think. Like, I know that sounds really bizarre. But so many things that we do throughout the day, I mean, just kind of walk through the day. 75% of it, we don't think about. We don't think about which hand we use to brush our teeth or, which hand we use to, like, we just do things on routine. And that means that our reaction is the same way. You know, so much of our reaction is just what's programmed in our head. So we have to shift that programming. And the best way to shift that programming is through deep thought. So I tell people I start off every morning with a few minutes, and when you first train yourself this, you need to spend a little bit more time. You can narrow it down in time frame the further you go, where you're literally 110% present. Like, you haven't touched your phone yet. You have no other influences. You're appreciating the beautiful sunrise or the sound of the rain, whatever it is. You're 100% present. And this is where you really focus on what you need to focus. Don't take too many things. Don't try to change your viewpoint or rewire your brain on too many items. Your brain will procrastinate. It will sabotage you because it will become overwhelmed, which engages the whole stress, fight, fear, conserve, withdraw, right? It will do that. So just choose your one thing that you're trying to repattern or you're trying to reprogram. And you just think deeply on that every single morning. And then you end cap that at the end of the day with what I say your evening gratitudes and review of reinforcement of that change in your thought pattern. When you are in those two stages, winding down, your brain waves are shifting into the theta, or in the morning when your brain waves are coming out, moving through the theta. Those are the two spots in the daytime that literally your brain is most open to reprogramming. So that's when you need to really, really think, engage your prefrontal cortex. This is where your problem solving, this is where your higher thinking comes from. And that's how you do it. And then there's some deep breathing exercises that you do because that engages increases circulation and all of that. But if you can bookend your day like that, your brain will focus on that while you're sleeping at night. It'll wake up the next morning with that on its mind. You reinforce that and then you repeat. And, you know, depending on how deeply ingrained the previous thought patterns are, it's going to take longer or shorter amounts of time to create that new thought process. And you're going to have to revisit it. Like I said, those bad things are branded in your brain. And so if you're not consistently on top of it, they'll creep back up and you'll notice them creeping back up and your overall negativity might become larger, or you might get snappier with relatives or, you know, whatever that is. So you have to continually do this as a daily process to just keep your brain moving in the right direction.
Yeah, you know, I love it. I everything I've ever been through, I always say I'm built for this, man. Look at all the stuff that I just overcame, man. I went through some shit, man. I went through some abuse.
I'm proud of every gray hair.
Look at this. That's a different perspective. You know what I mean? It was me. You know, I read a book recently and they've talked about speaking victimese. It's like a language, victimese. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, some people just speak victimese because they're taking that. They want to take that for some reason and they're searching for sympathy. Right. Can we talk about sympathy for a second? Is when your parents give you sympathy, does that weaken you?
I think, and I'm not sure what your definition, what you're thinking. I think there's a difference between sympathy and empathy.
When they're sympathetic towards you and they pity you and then you witness that as a kid. So let me clarify my question. You witness it as a kid because when they do that, then you feel like, oh, okay, I'm justified in whatever I'm slipping up in or excused by whatever. And then in the future, as a kid, you've had parents that were pitying you. And then as you go forward in the future and you grow up in an adult, you're looking for more sympathy out there. And I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So I would say there is definitely a time and a place when, you know, your child may need a little bit of extra sympathy or might need sympathy because something truly traumatic just happened in their life. You know, there was a shooting at the school. Like, we're talking serious situations, but on a day-to-day basis, yeah, you don't want to do that because you're patterning, you are creating that pattern in the child of I need to be cared for rather than stand on your own two feet.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a big difference. And the brain is gets very comfortable with the way it's molded, especially prior to puberty, right? It's like everything prior to puberty, those stages of development in the child's brain, they're kind of figuring out their place in the world, right? Where do I fit? And you have, as a parent, such a huge impact on that. Now, once puberty hits, it's almost like this door is shut and locked of that stage of development, because now the brain's just going on to all the complicated stuff that goes on post-puberty, right? So all of that pre, you know, 11, 12 years old, that's kind of locked in your brain. And it's a little bit harder. So if there were to rewire, so if there was a lot of that pity, if you will, during that stage, like, oh, don't cry, oh, honey, it's okay, that kind of thing, then that's what you're going to expect in life. And that's what you're going to expect in your career. And that's what you're going to expect from your boss. That's what you're going to expect from your friends. And that's going to make it difficult to find a job, because that's not the reality of jobs. That's going to, you know, you're going to draw to yourself people that are like yourself. So they're going to be emotionally draining on you, just like you're emotionally draining on them. But the challenge is that the brain loves its comfort zone because it doesn't have to spend any energy to work outside of its comfort zone. To change those patternings, it takes work. It literally takes glucose burned in your brain. Like, it takes energy. So it's not that you can't do it, right? It's that it takes the work.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, as we wind down here, your podcast, tell us about your podcast and what your podcast done for you in having a podcast. I want everybody to understand. And when you go on guests in and shows, like, this is powerful stuff. What has it done for you?
So the relationships that you build when you're podcasting or when you're a guest or you are a host are huge. And if you have a business or you have a platform that you want to take globally, to me, podcasting is the best way to do it. Because A, you're doing it from the comfort of your home or your office, your locale, right? But you can make international. One of the authors in the book that we just released is in London. Another one is in Ireland, right? So I've been on her podcast. She's been on my podcast. So you make these wonderful relationships that will last, especially if you continue to nurture them, which is a key. So that's one of the biggest benefits, is not just hearing the stories and being inspired by some of the stories, but really making global connections that serve you in so many ways.
Yeah, 100%. What's the name of your podcast for the audience?
We have two. Women Excelling Everywhere is one of the podcasts. Brain Lady Speaks has kind of been on the back burner, but that's got a ton of great practical application of complicated neuroscience in it. But that one's, there's a couple hundred episodes of that one out there. And we throw one out every couple of months or every couple times a month.
Awesome. Yeah. Guys, listen, you got to go check out Julie Anderson, the Brain Lady. I mean, you know, she's already spoken some great stuff here today, but I know she's got a lot more to share. And the best place to go for everybody is brainladyspeaker.com. Is that the best place for them to visit?
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Brainladyspeaker.com, guys. It'll be in the show notes. She's also on Instagram at Brain Lady Julie. You can check her out. Julie, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Mike, for this was a wonderful conversation. As you can tell, I love talking. So, hey, it was great. I appreciate you. I am honored that you like to talk. I am honored that you had me on. Thank you very much.
All right, hold tight while I wrap this up. Folks, thank you so much for being here on the What Are You Made Of show from That One Studio. It's your boy C-Rock signing off. And until next time, be that one. Diamonds in my eyes, I know I'm special.